second of the meeting between the board and the registrar stakeholder group. What we've got up on the screen currently is a list of discussion topics, I believe, from... I'm not sure whether these are from you or for us. They're yours. So let's kick off with those. I think we have Matt as chair of the registrar stakeholder group to take us through those.
Yep. Thanks, Bruce. Appreciate it. Matt Serlin here. Again, the group appreciates the board taking time out to have this dialogue and discussion. It's always one of our the highlights of the day for us, so we appreciate that as usual. I guess we'll just get started with the RAA and a brief just discussion from our standpoint. Obviously, there's been a lot of discussion about the topic during the week, both in respect to the Article 29 working group letter, as well as some of the other outstanding issues, the who is, data retention, some of the additional items. One of the biggest concerns for us that we wanted to kind of make sure we discussed today was the mechanism to getting registrars onto the new agreement once it's concluded, so that we retain that even playing field that we currently have today with most registrars on the 2009 agreement. So, you know, we discussed at the public session yesterday this the kind of proposed. Oh, hi, Steve.
Hi, Terry.
The proposed time frame towards, you know, the goal of having a completed RAA for public comment out by the end of the year. As we mentioned, we've been at this. You know, the folks on the registrar side as well as the folks on staff have worked extremely hard on this over the past year. And so I think you know, the goal of having this done by the end of the year is a good one. You know, our desire obviously is to not rush through some of these important complex issues. So we want to make sure that we're shooting for that completion date, but also doing so in a way that is the most beneficial for everyone and not simply rushing through to meet a desired deadline. So really just wanted to reinforce that and to get any feedback and questions that board members had on the status of the RAA discussions.
My apologies for coming in a couple minutes late, and my thanks to Bruce for getting things started on our side. How come we don't have hands raised from board members all over the place here?
Because we had a good briefing session yesterday.
Yeah. That's
right. Well, so we're done with all that. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. We'll see you later.
Yeah.
No, I think that, so for those of you that didn't hear, you know, Bruce said we did have a good update session yesterday. So, you know, I did note that there were many board members present during the session, appreciated that. And, you know, I think from our standpoint, you know, we're going to continue to work closely with staff to get these last issues wrapped up and then hopefully, you know, get the proposed RAA out for public comment and go from there. So I think with that, you know, one of the issues that we've found ourselves addressing throughout the RAA negotiations are kind of working through these complex issues. Who is data retention are two of them. And then I wanted to kind of call on my colleague Yoav, who's one of our GNSO counselors, to just kind of talk through some of our perspectives on the policy development process as it relates to more of these kind of community-wide issues. So, Yoav.
Yeah, thank you. So we've started this discussion already during the GNSO's discussion with the board, so I don't want to repeat the same things that I've already said during that discussion. But mainly what we believe is that looking at the Article 29 letter, it's clear that the issues of who is in data retention are extremely complex issues. And what we believe that we should, you know, should be considered seriously is from this point on to move to a PDP. This is if there's that I've said it before. I think that if there's a, if there's an issue on on everyone's table that will affect almost every stakeholder group in our community is this one, and it's really important that we will not do any mistakes. I want to clarify, this doesn't mean that we don't want this to be implemented. We're I think that it's common with we kind of came to understanding and consensus among registrars that this should be implemented in this way or another. We just need to make sure that it's implemented in the right way. So just as this, there's another complex issue on the table, which is the what's it called, the privacy.
Privacy proxy
providers, too many abbreviations, this is also just as that, this is a complex issue that we believe should not be treated within a contract negotiation but through a PDP. We've seen recently the RTP PDP going quickly on the GNSO. I can assure you that we'll do our best to push this forward as much as possible to make sure it's quick. I personally have said before that I joined the GNSO. One of the things that I always didn't like that things went slow, and I think that with me, there most of the people on the council now see it in the same way and want things to move faster. So this should not be seen, and I know this is sometimes seen as that, and asking for a PDP is to try and postpone things. No, this is just to make sure that we're doing the things right.
Let me ask, what will the other points of view be with respect to the idea of pushing this through a PDP?
You mean what would be the other views that will be raised regarding who is verification and data retention?
Yes.
So specifically the IPC and the BC said that they're against it. The NCUC said it was on the GNSO council meeting. They said that they were in favor. I haven't heard everyone, provide their view, but this is what we've heard till now. Again, I think it's a complicated issue, and if you hear for a different stakeholder group that they want to be heard, I think we should allow them.
And all of this is a discussion about process. What can you say about the substance of the matter of where the what the key points are, and is there light at the end of the tunnel no matter which tunnel we choose to go down?
Sorry, Steve, you're talking specifically to those two issues, the who is and data retention?
Yeah,
so I think there is light at the end of the tunnel, frankly. I think, the last proposal that we put forth, which is a two-tiered data retention, six months for certain data, life of the registration plus 2 years for other pieces, and who is validation, where the registrar would choose to validate either an email address or phone after putting the name into the zone file. I think if that's an acceptable position to staff, and we get that into the RAA, then I think that's a win for everyone. On the back end of that, what we have said consistently is that, we certainly don't think that that's the end of the discussion, that, if further, who is validation, data retention is required and is desired by the community, then we think anything beyond what we've sort of put forth is where we'd like to see it go, through the policy development process, because it doesn't just impact the contracted parties. It doesn't just impact the registrars. It obviously has a great impact on, those that want to register domain names, on registrants and other folks as well. I think Mason wanted to get in the queue, so maybe I'll ask him to speak as well. Mason.
Thanks, Matt. Mason Cole. I'm a GNSO counselor representing the registrars. I just wanted to add a bit to what Yoav said about the
about the process. And by the way, I do agree with Matt in his answer to Steve's question. I think that's an exact representation of what's happening. My observation on this is on the RAA is I understand that there's frustration at the GNSO level with the length of policy development processes. If there are improvements that can be made to that, I'm certainly for them. I want to make sure, though, that we're careful about how we treat our agreements because, in effect, what's happened is the community has come to registrars and said, we have this set of problems and we need your help with them. And there's an effort to make the contract and enforcement mechanisms that go along with the contract the way to clean up certain behavior on the internet or a way to handle registrant behavior, et cetera. The PDP exists for very good reasons. One of those is the predictability and stability that registrars need in order to take care of their customers and run their businesses. So contrary to, I think, some of the bad press out there about registrars, we certainly do not throw things into a PDP gleefully so that we can intentionally slow them down. If there's a way to speed up a PDP for the good ideas that have been proposed, then we're happy to do that. But we do deserve reasonably to have some predictability for the sake of our customers and our businesses.
Yeah, I just want to call out the elephant in the room as well with verification. I mean, the late in the day issues around conflict with national laws, I think are huge, and I don't feel they've been fully fleshed out. There's certainly, we know that the EU privacy people have now weighed in against. I can tell you Canada's privacy laws are as or more strict than the European laws, and nobody has talked about the issue then of very different verification requirements for different registrars, and or the issue of sort of safe haven jurisdictions, if you will. So, I think that Steve, now sorry, Fadi, you're dragged into this mess too. You guys are going to be the ones on point taking heat if something doesn't get done. And those issues are, sitting there like big steaming piles. So, be aware, boys.
We have not only elephants in the room, but some other large, woolly mammoths and whatever. the sitting right behind your elephants are the Who Is review team recommendations, commentary from SSAC saying, and so what's all this for?
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. I believe it's on your agenda, so yeah. That's great.
Okay. Steve, you said you had more, but I don't know if what Elliot...
Well, the more actually was to bring the Who Is review process into the discussion and ask what's your view about the interaction between that and the active negotiations in the RAA.
Yeah, James.
Hi, Steve, and other board members. James Bladel from GoDaddy and a participant on the Who Is review team. I've been struggling with the same question, Steve. I see a lot of overlap between a couple of different areas. One is this existing newly born PDP on the concept of thick Who Is, coupled with the recommendation for improved Who Is accuracy and a centralized Who Is database coming from the RT4 Who Is review team, and also this concurrent negotiations within the RAA to improve Who Is accuracy primarily through verification. So I see a number of things kind of all on the same general course, which is attempts to improve Who Is accuracy through increased obligations on registrars, on registries, and in some extent passed down to registrants. I think the good news is that the concerns that the Who Is review team had relative to the and I'm not speaking on behalf of the review team. That's gone now. That's I'm speaking just personally here. The concerns they had relative to centralized Who Is system might be alleviated or folded into this thick versus thin Who Is PDP But I think that there is this question of if we go in the direction, for example, of a proxy, privacy proxy accreditation program, which is part of recommendations of both groups, where is that coming from? Is that coming from the RAA? Is that coming from the Who Is Review team? I think the answer is, at least from the registrars I've spoken to, the answer is that if we direct those efforts towards a PDP, it doesn't really matter where they've come from. They become consensus policy, and they get into our contract, and they're immediately enforceable. But if we continue to try and do these kind of end-arounds through various other channels and mechanisms, then it gets a little confusing.
Just picking up one example there, because we've been sort of looking at the Who Is Review Team recommendations, and I also looking at the RAA conversations. One of the topics that is discussed under both forums, if you like, is the proxy and privacy service providers. I note that I believe from the session yesterday, the plan is to incorporate something in the agreement regarding proxy privacy service providers. The Who Is Review Team talks about ICANN should regulate those providers. And then I see in the GNSO Council has been trying to work towards identifying input for us on where things should go through a policy development process. And they have actually identified, according to the thing I'm reading here unanimously, I'm not sure I believe that, but maybe it is, a PDP should be required to implement those processes. So how do you see that proxy privacy discussion evolving? Is the registrar agreement really just a hook to say that you will agree with any policy that's created? Or are you envisaging that there is some work to try and create some rules around those prior to or separate to the PDP process? Just interested to see, particularly the RAA people, where you see that overlapping or how you see the development of that, because I think the expectation that you'll create if you put that in the RAA is that there will magically appear some regulation of that space. But I think the issue is how do you actually get to that point?
Yeah, I'll take a crack and then I'll ask my colleagues up here to weigh in as well. Within the RAA, I think what the language essentially says is that upon development of a privacy proxy accreditation program, that registrars would be required to use such accredited providers in the case where they are knowingly accepting privacy or private registrations. So that's what is in the RAA. And then to James's point, once that goes through the policy development process, which we fully expect that members of the registrar community would be actively involved in participating in, that once that program is developed and rolled out through that process, then it would obligate the registrar to follow the outcome of that policy. Volker, yeah.
Maybe just to add to that, Volker Greimann speaking. We have seen very early on that the privacy proxy services would be a loophole to the verification systems, so we try to deal with that by that process of having to use only accredited providers. However, there is no such accreditation program so far, so we have agreed to, with ICANN, together with ICANN staff, to create a straw man based on the requirements of registrars for their registration agreements, what privacy proxy services would have to provide to be accredited. We would then seek community input on that straw man and finally make that policy. But what we are proposing, we are working on right now, it's not supposed to be replacing policy. It's just something that we are brainstorming to kickstart that policy process.
Okay, so that really helps clarify. So what I'm hearing, just let me repeat that back, is that the registrars are agreeing to put a clause in the agreement that says that you will abide by any policy developed there. You're then also agreeing to work with staff to create a straw man proposal. That proposal would then go into the policy development process as an input document. Is that correct?
Yep, that's exactly correct.
Thanks.
Elliot, go ahead.
Very small, and Volker, your English is so much better than my German. So, you use the word loophole, and I don't think that's accurate. I don't think we view privacy services as a loophole to verification. We view it as a legitimate means of protecting privacy, and just the use of the word loophole makes it sound like getting around and So I want to words are important, and I want to be very careful with that.
Yeah, just responding to that. Maybe the word loophole is not quite the right word, but if we all as registrars agreed to verify registrant data, and then only who is privacy proxy server providers would be our customers, and those weren't required to undergo the same steps, that would certainly create a loophole. And that's what we saw.
Any other additional points on the RIA or the who is recommendations?
I think we have Bertrand.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, Bertrand.
Just a quick point to it's Bertrand Le Chapelle. Just a quick point to reiterate what I had the opportunity to say in the interaction with the GNSO the other day, that the fact that there can be that late in the process a letter by the Article 29 working party is shedding a strange light on the affirmation of a large number of GAC members regarding the kind of coordination that they have conducted at the national level between the different public authorities that could be concerned with this topic. Thank you.
Thanks, Bertrand. One, you know, additional point that we talked about in the update session as well is this notion of revocation of the entire agreement in and of itself. If the registrar marketplace were to change and require such a essentially what we refer to as the blow-up clause. I think we've been pretty clear as a stakeholder group that is not something that, we would not present that contract to any of our general counsel to review and sign off with such uncertainty in there, with one party's ability to simply do away with the agreement if it circumstances were to dictate. We feel strongly about that, and so like I said earlier, that definitely is something that as we work towards getting this completed by the end of the year, that hopefully that's something that we see pulled out of the agreement as we move forward in the coming months. Okay, well let's keep moving along. I'm going to give the microphone to Stefan to talk about the new GTLD impact on the contracted parties house. Stefan?
Yeah, thanks, Matt. This is Stefan van Gelder. And thank you to the board for welcoming us and engaging with us today. This is a topic that's of great interest to us, obviously, but it has been discussed both through interactions with the GNSO and in other places. So the way we wanted to approach it today was really to ask the board what their feeling was on the potential impact of the new GTLD program on, the contracted parties house in the GNSO, which includes the registry and registrar stakeholder group. And I suppose we're also asking the question in the light of the board having to take a decision rather soon on whether the GNSO review should be initiated time that is supposed to happen, which is February 2013, I believe, from memory. But really, our main point of interest is to get a feeling from the board on how they see the potential impact of this program on our house in the GNSO.
Within the board, we have a structural improvements committee. Ray is the chair. Ray, do you want to offer up some comments?
Thank you, Steve. I'll let Bertrand talk about the impacts. However, I'll reiterate what I said the other day in the council meeting, because I'm sure there are a lot of people here that weren't there. First of all, the bylaws don't allow us a lot of wiggle room, so the review has got to start next year. Okay, that's number one. But having said that, if you look at the work that's anticipated inside of the impacts project, which still needs an acronym. How about new GTLD impacts on structure and procedures or processes, NISP? Okay, anyway, that's really a strategic planning type of effort. And whenever you begin a strategic planning effort, the first thing you need, one of the first things that you do is that you look at, you do a SWOT analysis, strengths, weaknesses, and opportunities and threats. And the review is going to identify the strengths and weaknesses. So it's actually doing half of that analysis that you'd have to do anyway. And so once you understand where the strengths are, then you know where you can leverage those strengths to, in certain areas, if needed, to work the impact program. And on the other hand, if there are weaknesses that you detect and that you may have to overcome in order to deal with the impacts, then that will occur as well. There's going to be a session with stakeholder group chairs and so forth on Thursday, where we're going to go through some more of the details of this. This is something that was requested by the chairs, something that we've promised you, and so we're ready to deliver. In there you will see that there's a criteria, and the criteria is very objective. You're going to know what it is ahead of time. It's not going to be like the last GNSO review, which was kind of invented as it went along. It's going to be a very well-known thing exercise. So bottom line is we have to do it. We're going to do it in a very orderly way, and the results of this will actually help work on the impacts project. And I hope that it clears things up.
I see Judith stands up and Chris is, but were you going to pass the things over to Bertrand to expand on?
Yeah, I only answered half of that. So Bertrand really needs to answer the other piece, which is the board's view, or is actually the board doesn't have a view at this point in time, but you still will hear Bertrand's view.
All right, well, let's do Bertrand and then Judith and then Chris.
Yeah, no, just in answering this this question, I want to highlight two things. The first thing is, the discussion that we're trying to initiate is not exclusively on GNSO's contracted party houses impact. The very interesting element in this is about discussing the evolution of the organization as a whole, its missions and its structure and processes in the context of the existence of this program and the implementation of this program. So, for instance, without getting into details, it has impacts potentially on staffing, on how you handle compliance, on how you handle the support system for the registries and the registrars and so on. In terms of process, it brings very interesting questions of how do you handle consensus building in general in groups that are much larger than smaller ones. That kind of topic. So the goal is to make a coherent list and as comprehensive list as possible of issues that are identified so that all the different groups can work on their own in their little in their own structures and constituencies. And when they gather together in the physical meetings, they have the same chart and the same checklist to exchange. So that's the general goal. Just as a point of process, without getting further, we intended, after the request for feedback after Prague, and thanks to the registrar constituency for the contribution and the GNSO as a whole, we intended to have a full session open in Toronto to discuss those issues. For mostly schedule reasons and time availability, we have decided this time to do just a discussion with the chairs and of the SOs, ACs, and constituencies to discuss mostly two points. One, how does the community view the process to discuss this? and how can we best prepare for Beijing so that the community is fully engaged, fully in charge, but we are all aware of the timing and the best moment to discuss this. And the second topic is what Ray was alluding to, i.e. how does that articulate with the GNSO review mandated by the bylaws, and also the upcoming ATRT2 that will address at least some transversal aspects of what we're discussing here. So in terms of procedure, the goal is to align everybody in having a clear list of the potential challenges and to distinguish those that will require staff evolution, process evolution, and potentially, if any, structural evolution. I hope it answers partially your question.
Thank you. Judith?
So in layman's terms, I'm worried. I am worried. At this point in time, something, and I speak on a personal basis, something that is obvious to many is that regardless of the new GTLD, the diversity of interests, the divergence of views within the GNSO is causing an amount of paralysis. There are very, very critical decisions that have to be made. PDP is not a solution. It is but a process. Creative solution is required from the entrepreneurs in the room. So my prayer is let's step out of the SO and look at the entire domain name space. We have to think outside the box to bring the new GTLD into implementation in a manner that we truly perform and wow, put that touch of wow in this internet space. If not, you are literally giving it to Apple. Think, there are other competitors out there who can literally hijack what you created together as a community. It's my observation. Thank you.
Thank you. Chris?
Thank you, Steve. Stefan, I'm conscious that Bertrand has given you kind of like a meta view of the looking at the impact of new GTLDs, and that, well, that's obviously very important. But you also asked about if the board has a view on any specific issues that you may face, and the board doesn't have a view. But just to, I have some thoughts just to give you an idea of where sort of the sorts of things that are percolating for me. For example, with vertical integration, you're going to have registries that are registrars and registrars that are registries. Now, that has an impact on your structure because do I join both? If I join one, am I prohibited from joining the other? And how do I get my voice in across the... That's the sort of stuff that micro is the wrong word, but as opposed to meta level, that may impact on your structure. And if you look at the non-contracted parties' house, then mixing, because you've got some brand applicants who will run their own registries, but they're also businesses. So do they get to sit both sides? And what are the dangers of capture? And could you possibly have a situation where, you know, you suddenly get all four or five or six different constituencies being captured by a small group of people? And on top of that, you've also got the question of expanding constituencies and what does that mean? I think there's a proposal for a cyber cafe constituency or something like that, and I'm totally unclear what that's about. But so there's a danger of this whole thing running out of control in an attempt to be equitable and open to everybody. So at that level, that's also the sort of stuff that needs to be dealt with. And my personal concern is that if we put all of that in the hands of an independent review, It's an opportunity for reviewers to completely rebuild something, and that may not be the best thing for anybody.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. So I know I had Elliot, but Stefan, I think you you want to defer to Elliot. Elliot.
So I want to come back to words again, and I think that one of the things that is going to become obvious and will be extremely important as we relook at the GNSO, which I think we're going to have to, is that the terms contracted and non-contracted parties, which was a very convenient way for us to capture an idea in the past, is now an anachronism. We will have registrars that are no longer of one stripe, and we will have registries that are no longer of one stripe, and we will see the interests of registrars, traditional registrars that would sell to end users, become much more closely aligned with different groups inside of the GNSO. And I think we need to do two things here. I think we need to, first of all, stop using those terms as terms of art, because they are anachronisms and they will carry weight, because they're certainly looked at as the way we look at dividing power in the GNSO today. And second, we should look at this as an opportunity. What ICANN was hoped to be at its onset, and through the, really still through till today, is to allow for user interests and interests around a piece of subject matter to deal with that subject matter, which would inherently make the GNSO a lot skinnier in its function today, a lot more like the board is to staff or GNSO recommendations. And I think we really need to be careful with the words and to look to the future here. Thanks.
Yeah. Respond a bit here. When we met with the CCNSO earlier today, one of the pieces of interaction had to do, and basically around the same question, was a strong plea by them to make sure that the CCs were not, that the distinction between the CCs and the Gs was not destroyed, that they liked that. What's your view of the relationship of that statement to your statement that the distinction between contracted and non-contracted parties, and I recognize that that's in our language, that it's not a direct comparison necessarily, because those terms apply to what's inside of the GNSO as opposed to across. But from a common sense point of view, if I just ask the naive question, to me, the CCs are non-contracted parties, are they not? And so,
I think it's a great question, and it highlights where we're going to struggle on language. I mean, CCs, you know, when we drafted the reform document that led to a lot of the stuff that ended up happening in ICANN 2.0, you know, we bent way over backwards to give CCs recognition that they were different. And that difference, Steve, was all about the fact that their birth and their governance was inside of their nation states. And it's that difference that doesn't change going forward. So I think, you know, when I'm talking about this, this is all about contracted and non-contracted in the context of the Gs and the way that the GNSO works today. Yeah, so in other words, their statement is completely consistent, I think, with what I'm saying. I agree with it, and I think it's consistent.
Thanks. So, Stefan Van Gelder again. So there's a lot there. Thank you for those responses. I don't know how we can get the wow factor into the GNSO, but I've been trying for 4 years and failing miserably. But there is one thing that just listening to this comes to my mind, which is, I understand what Elliot's saying about contracted, the term. The term does have meaning to us because we sign a contract with ICANN, obviously, so to do business. The term G in the GNSO has meaning to us because it means a specific space in the internet. And Judith, you mentioned the word supplier. we are suppliers to some people, whether they be internet users, purchasers of domain names, or supplying services to ICANN. I don't know how exactly you meant it, but all that does seem to point to the need to look at this. I'm just trying to take a leaf out of your book with a wider angle. And maybe, you know, the constraints that we've put ourselves in by having a GNSO and a CCNSO, just picking up on your point, Steve, the questions you got, the CCNSO does operate under a very different set of circumstances to the GNSO because they have no contracts, they have limited, if any, obligations to ICANN compared to what we as contracted parties have within the GNSO. So I'm just wondering if one of the things that we need to look at is the very structure and whether these two SOs may not need a third SO that better represents what the ecosystem will become, which is suppliers dealing with services rather than, you know, trying to get away from contracts, etc. And if I can use that to lead into the next topic, because I'm conscious of time as well. No, that's also something that I think, you know, you once again, you asked, you said you were worried and you asked for bluntness and truth. I think there's an element of worry with us that what we're seeing at the moment, so now I'm talking about the conflict of interest and the way that this is being portrayed within the community, is that anyone that has anything to do with someone that has a contract with ICANN is somehow tainted, somehow tarred with a brush. And if you want me to be honest, I think that worries us. I think that's a worry for us in that we feel that there's a lot of experience and expertise within that part of the ecosystem. And I'm trying to not put words on it, but not labels on it, but that part of the ecosystem. And we feel that we are worried that it might be shut out because of this perceived conflict of interest. So if we are to be blunt, we would ask the question of whether the board shares this view and whether you feel that perhaps this has gone too far the other way. And, you know, what is your view on the way those two extremes can be brought together?
Oh, yeah, Bertrand.
During a breakfast we had this morning with the alumni board members, somebody had a very interesting formulation that I think may be used in this discussion regarding the purpose of ICANN, among other things. And the comment was, ICANN is a space to enable the coexistence, the resolution of conflicting interests, which is a different thing. The purpose of a multi-stakeholder process, a multi-equal stakeholder process, to take Fadi's term, could be a mesh process, by the way, is to bring actors who are engaged in the activities with the actors who are potentially impacted by those activities. And it is a unique system. It is neither regulation by an external entity like a government, having no relationship with the regulated entities, and it is not self-regulation either. And so the question that you're asking is a broader question of how do we introduce a broader term to handle those issues that are ethics, because conflict of interest is only one component of all the issues that we are facing. They have to relate to confidentiality, to behavior in competition environment, the question about patents, for instance, that was raised in a different setting, is part also of an ethical behavior of the community. And in that regard, the notion that transparency and clarity about the situation of the different actors, it is for the community, for the board, and for everybody else, is one of the key prerequisites. And I'm not sure that at the moment we have paid enough attention to a clear repository, a clear place where all the different interests that people have are simply documented and accessible. Whether the pendulum has moved too far in one direction or the other, this is up for the community to discuss. I see the theme clearly emerging in the discussions around the NOMCOM, around the selection of people on the different committees, and it's permeating the community, and it's probably a good thing to address and keep in mind. And I know that Fadi is putting the question of ethics and standards, as the rest of the board, very high on the agenda.
Yeah, Bruce.
Just an observation, and particularly when we're talking about nominating committee and a few other processes, I often hear when people don't get the outcome they want in some kind of vote, the pressure is, well, that means we need to change the structure. And I often look at that and I think, is that really going to help? We saw a huge exercise to restructure the GNSO, which I think just has added immense amount of overheads, cost a huge amount of time, meant that we lost a lot of progress on nearly all the policy topics at the same time, because it's the same group of volunteers, and it actually didn't change anything. If anything, it's got worse. In contrast, another approach is to actually look at attitudes and ethics. And if you look at the way the board operates, the board could be just as dysfunctional because it's got people from all sorts of different areas. And if we all sort of brought our own baggage onto the table and started, you know, aggressively advocating registrar versus CC positions, the structure of the board is no different to the structure of the GNSO in many ways, yet the board works together very effectively. And that's because the board members all bring an attitude of doing what's best for the organisation as a whole, and we invest a lot of time as the board getting together face-to-face numerous times during the year, not just in these meetings, and we build a collaborative approach. That, I think, is the solution, not restructuring, changing votes, changing the order. If we're going to do that, we would be restructuring every parliamentary system around the world every two or three years when we decide we don't get the president or the prime minister that we want. Then clearly we have the wrong structure. That's restructure Australia. It's about attitudes and ethics and collaboration. And I think this week I'm seeing a lot of improvement. Even just simple things. The business constituency and the intellectual property constituency actually had an agreed set of topics that they wanted around trademark protection. It's the first time I've ever seen that. And then I saw, some of the registry operators, VeriSign, Newstar and Oz Registry, agreeing on a particular approach to the Trademark Clearinghouse. Never seen that before either. But it's about the individuals that were participating and actually with an objective to try and reach something that is actually the ultimate solution. So just caution this obsession with structure and actually focus more on the attitudes of individuals and working together collaboratively.
Yeah, Judith and Stefan, and then I'm conscious of the time. I want to make sure that we're respectful of your time. We've got about 12 minutes left, and I know you all had a list of topics, so I want to make sure we have an opportunity for that. Yeah, Judith.
So back to the question of Stefan. On my personal feeling of the COI issues is something we have to recognize is the power of the Internet. And any powerful organization or institution automatically becomes one of suspicion. We don't feel powerful when we sit within this ballroom, but the perception, the use of the internet by a global population is such, there is now this interest in how we operate, which is why I believe all of these issues are erupting around us. But the challenge is, and our CEO has said this, is we have to perform. If they expect us to dance a certain tune, to show a negative or to show reluctance, creates suspicion. We are just so used to doing things the way we just we will have to step out of a comfort zone. We have no choice. And sitting on the Who Is RT is not going to help us. Not to move on the RAA negotiations is not going to help us. Thank you.
Thanks, Judith. Stefan?
Yeah, thanks, Matt. Very quickly, just to follow on from what Bruce was saying, I take heart in hearing you, Bruce, say that the board works well because all the individuals that make up the board bring to the party a common interest in what's good for ICANN. I hope that's true, but what I was looking for in asking this question perhaps suggests that it's not quite true. Otherwise, if that was the perception that was accepted by all, I don't think we'd be asking the question, because there would be no conflict of interest perception if it's a recognized fact that everyone in the board brings a common desire to work for ICANN without any baggage. So I really support what you said, and I just hope it's true. I worry that it may not quite be true, because if it was, you wouldn't be focusing yourselves so much on conflict of interest, to the point, just to make it clear why I'm asking this question, to the point that some of you are excluded from discussions that I would like all of the expertise on the board to be included in. Simple as that. So we avoid certain mistakes of the past. Let me just leave that there.
So it's an intriguing point that you make, Stefan. The board is extremely conscientious. I think I agree quite strongly with what Bruce has said, that within the board there is a strong belief that together we are operating as a team with the common good. We are also aware that just because we think this is true doesn't necessarily mean that that's viewed the same externally. And so we have the dual perception of how we see ourselves versus how we understand we're seen from the outside. And we've been trying to go down the somewhat challenging path of doing the right thing and, to the extent that there is not necessarily a contrary view, but let's just say additional set of constraints, to be extra careful to conform to what we think the requirements are for appearances and for establishing trust externally. So that's it's led to a bit more encumbrance in our processes and so forth. As you point out, some of us, including Bruce and myself, are excluded from that process. And we've wrestled with that a bit, and the and understand that it looks a little awkward from the outside. It has a very peculiar, unexpected positive effect, which is it's divided up our workload, and we've become more efficient. I have to say, as chair, that the amount of work that Shireen has taken off of my shoulders is incredible. And far from feeling any competition or discomfort about it, it's been a degree of, despite the fact that it was awkwardly imposed, a degree of internal organization that has dramatically increased our efficiency. And I it's, you know, it's sort of peculiar that we wouldn't have arrived at that on our own for exactly the reason that everybody who's got anything, any sense of expertise would be. But we've got an enormous amount of expertise within that committee, and we're feeling a lot less awkward about the way that's set up than it might seem from the outside. So for what it's worth, that's where we are. We've certainly spent a lot of time wondering if this was a big problem. And at the end of the day, we've just moved our attention to getting on with things.
Thanks, Steve. So, yeah, again, you know, we're obviously mindful of the board's time, and so we've got about, you know, just about 5 minutes left. So I wonder if we it makes sense to skip ahead. You folks had a list of a few items, and maybe we can just, you know, field questions on those and have a discussion if you want to, you know, pick which of those topics you'd like to get our input on. We'll take the last couple minutes to do that.
Actually, quite a bit of what is on our topics we've covered one way or another. I don't suppose we've talked about patents in policy development and contract negotiations.
Just, you know, we only talked about who is in the context of the RAA.
I'm sorry?
We only talked about the who is.
Yeah, Elliot, can you just a little closer to the mic?
We only talked about who is in the context of the RAA and not in the context, not the report itself. And I think there's some very important comments.
Take it away.
There. So, you know, if I could, there are some very, very troubling things in the who is report with respect to all the people who worked long and hard on this. You know, and I think as a lot of you know, Two Cows was deeply involved in the first 5, 6, 7 years of ICANN. You know, Bruce and Ross, you know, died on that hill. There are a few things I want to highlight as troubling in particular. First is the tone that's set out at the beginning that basically says, you know, contracted parties, this will only cost them money and not do them any good, so they really just don't want to do anything about it. You know, what a terrible flavor and a deep untruth. I think the second thing is, you know, the nature of the group, there's two independent experts. One is a security expert, and one is somebody who deeply desires more security. Those are the outside experts that were on this. And, I think that at the end of the day, we, you know, got what we set out with those frames. And I would strongly endorse the ESSAC report, which I think more properly framed this, so we can decide if we want to be quick here to, you know, show that we're getting something done, or if we want to be good. And you know, we've been trying to reform who is since the very beginning of ICANN. It was one of the very first things that was undertaken. And the reason that we haven't is because we're trying to make, you know, a boat into an airplane. And if we don't really sort of take a look at what we're dealing with here rather than just trying to shoehorn it, I think we'll always end up in the same place, which is just about to a conclusion, have it killed, and start again.
Well, I have a apologies, but has there been a report from you? The you can be as narrow or as broad as you like, either you yourself or from registrar constituency or stakeholder group, in parallel with the ESSAC report commenting on the who is.
You know, Steve, Two Cows is an organization probably invested somewhere in the range of a few thousand hours in who is, and we were, you know, there was an outcome that Bruce was very much involved with. I think it was Bruce's recommendations at the beginning that eventually got accepted. And through outside lobbying, the board at the time rejected those recommendations. We gave up on it. And I can tell you that now what I do is I read the output of the groups that have come out with, and I'll give my opinion on them. And I'm telling you, the ESSAC report comes close to nailing it. And this who is set of recommendations, you know, really is just sort of the
so
same
I hear you. I'm just we're at a particular juncture here.
Great.
So we've got the who is report sitting on our desk, as it were. We have the ESSAC report commenting on that. And so the question that I'm asking you, and I understand, believe me, I understand the enormous amount of energy that's gone in the past and the frustrations and so forth, but holding that aside for a second, given the decision process that's underway, is there a current comment from registrar constituency or from others that embodies your feelings that you're expressing now.
No, there's nothing formal, and we have a representative on the committee, and I wouldn't, you know, I'm speaking in my, you know, Tucows capacity, not on behalf of the constituency.
Feel free to put it on the record, and if only to go dredge up what was there and put a fresh date on it and say what we said.
Bruce is willing to resurrect OPOC, so am
yeah,
I.
Bruce, you have to dig up that OPOC report as well. Just a reminder, actually, Steve, I'm pleased that a lot of people are focusing on the ESAC report and the questions raised, but I will note that Louis Tuton had pretty much the same report back in early 2003. And Paul Toomey reminded me that, you know, we need to spend a bit more time looking at ICANN archives. And Denise Michelle reminded me that very close to here, actually, in Montreal at the ICANN meeting in June 2003, we had 2 days of HUWIS workshops. And there's presentations pretty much covering all the topics we've just talked about in that recent report. But it's actually much more detailed. So one of the things I'll do for those interested, I'll give a link to the presentations from June of 2003. I don't think anything's changed since then.
I mean, Steve, my submission would be IBID and OPSIT. So
I'm not.
Thomas Russell is also part of this.
Yeah, I did not go spend all that time myself. I was a lot smarter then. But I do feel obliged to come up to speed, and that's not going to gypsy me making a decision. But I want to get facile and current, and I take your comment as coming from a very knowledgeable and heavily invested position, invested in trying to do the right thing, and have thought through these things. So I want to make sure that we have all of the information spread out.
I mean, if it helps for Tucows to submit a letter supporting the ESAC report, I am thrilled to do that, and I'll get that.
No, I don't want just a plus one. I want the original thinking, or you know, your thinking on it, as opposed to if all you want to say is plus one to ESAC, that's unnecessary. ESAC's getting plenty of attention, and as Bruce said, they're only reiterating what was said earlier.
Great, thanks, Steve. So I think that brings us to the end of our time. I just did want to take one moment at the end here to recognize Stefan Van Gelder in front of the board. He will be leaving as the chair of the GNSO and has been a great representative for the stakeholder group and has really done an amazing job as chair. So I wanted to thank him in front of the board for his service on the council, leading them through often turbulent times and doing so with a great degree of class and professionalism. So thank you to Stefan for that. And once again, thank the board for your time today. We know you have many different groups coming in, and so we appreciate the conversation.
This is primary work for us, so there's no, we're not taking time away from anything else. This is a key activity for us. Thanks.